Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. WynnBET is now live in all these states, and the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas has finally landed in online sports betting and casino play. From boosted parlays to live in-game offs on every major sport, WynnBET gives you the tools to win. Sign up today for your risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download the WynnBET app right now or visit WynnBET.com to start winning. Well, hello there. Happy Wednesday. I'm taping it Tuesday night. Happy Wednesday. I never know what I'm doing this podcast anymore. Aaron Quinn, cover one. I'm not going to waste a lot of time here at the top. I wish I could have this dude on every week. One of my favorite people to talk to. Not just football, all kinds of shit, man. And you got me into something. We'll talk about that in a second. But what's going on, buddy, man? How you doing?
Living the dream, man. The weather is getting worse. But that means it's close to Christmas time.
I hate it.
I know you do. I know you do. You know what? Today stunk. Today in Buffalo, it's Monday. People listen to this. I don't know when people are going to be listening to this, but it's Monday evening in Buffalo, or Tuesday evening now.
Tuesday. You know what? It gets to be this time of year with the weather. We're all the same.
Dude, it was like, it was snowing this morning. I had to walk my kids to school in the snow. And then it was like heavy rain snow later on. It's nasty. Here's my thing. This shouldn't be considered fall. It's still technically fall. Shouldn't
right.
be.
I'll give you that.
Shouldn't be. This is winter.
I'll give you that. It is winter. I don't care what the calendar says or what the official rules are. Look, man, I'm going to be honest with you. And I know, you know, this is Talk Buffalo podcast. I'm from Buffalo, born and raised in Buffalo, lived 5 years, obviously, in Florida, just came back a handful of months ago. Probably shouldn't say this if I'm trying to score brownie points with my hometown community, but honestly, dude, I got a love-hate relationship right now with this region. I really do.
Because of the weather? Or?
The weather bothers me. Lots of things bother me. I'm not, certainly not going to get into any kind of political or societal conversation about right. it. It's just, I don't know. It's different. I'm not saying it's better. I'm not saying it's worse. It's just different. I hate the weather, though. I'll tell you that right now. I'm struggling with the weather. I just hate being cold. I mean, look, I never liked being cold, and Florida made me soft. And I'm not afraid to admit that. I'm softer than ever right now. Like, this shit probably ain't bothering many people when it's 40, 42 degrees. I was like, I'm freezing, man. I don't like it. I don't like it. I do like Christmas, though. I am in the Christmas spirit.
Finally, welcome to the Christmas spirit.
Well, we talked about this
before. You're too strict, man. You got to get rid of that.
Christmas started the day after Thanksgiving for me.
You got to get rid of that.
It started the day after Thanksgiving for me. But yeah, man, I'm all in. I'm excited about that. And I've talked about this before. In Florida, we never had Christmas season because we came up here every year for Christmas, like 2-3 days before Christmas. So for me, Christmas season started when I got to Buffalo, like December 22nd or whatever every year.
Right.
This year's different. Got an apartment here, went all out, got a tree. I've spent a couple hundred bucks.
Did you get a real tree? Did you get a fake tree?
Got a real tree. Got a real tree.
I got a real tree.
At a lot on Abbott Road. I don't remember the name of the lot, but it wasn't one of those corporate places. It was nice, man. It was fun too to get the tree. Didn't take long. It took like maybe 5 minutes. I said, take that tree.
Yeah.
Didn't shop around. It was cold, so I didn't want a banner with the guy. He said $80. I said, all right.
Deal.
It was too cold to banner. I even gave him a $10 tip because, you know, he tied it to the tree and all that shit. But yeah, man, I went to Target and Walmart. I bought in lights. I bought ornaments because we lost a lot of our shit. So, and again, I haven't needed it for 5 years. I don't even know where most of it is. So I went out and bought ornaments and lights. My kid Shane went to Target the other night. He bought a one of those lit up reindeers for the front lawn. And I don't remember. Well, something with Star Wars. I think it's stupid, but whatever. He liked it. And it's on the ground. The porch has lights on it. So yeah, man, I'm all in it for the spirit of Christmas. And again, after Thanksgiving, it's officially Christmas season now.
So, content-wise, I disagree entirely. I think if you're going to really consume all the content there is, music, movies, it's got to go before Thanksgiving. There's just too much of it, in my opinion. For me, I don't have the time to watch every single day, so I got to get a head start on that stuff.
But for the average person like you, you're right.
Decorating-wise, I agree with you. We go family tradition. The day after Thanksgiving, we go get our tree. We go up to Tim Burr's up in Lockport. Really cool place. Freezing cold this weekend. Freezing our butts off. Walked the entire lot. Found the perfect tree. Big fan of doing that. And then getting the lights up on the house, all that stuff happens after Thanksgiving. But consuming the content, man, in my opinion, there's too much good Christmas content to wait until after, because then you only got the 20, whatever, 30 something days, 28 days or something like that, right after Thanksgiving.
It's a fair point. Now, I had you on the show November 2nd. I just looked it up. I remember having this conversation with you, and I didn't agree with you. And I still sort of don't agree with you when it comes to the content. To me, I couldn't get into watching Christmas movies or listening to Christmas music before Thanksgiving was over. Now, I work from home, my regular job during the day, and I have like a home office, and I don't get bothered by my boss. I know what, you know, I just got work and I got to do it.
Right.
So I sit here and bang out Christmas movies. And I remember you talking about Christmas movies on the last time you were on the show. And it's like, I never realized that other than like the biggest classics, you know, like the National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation and the sure. Home Alone's Christmas Story, and you know, all that other shit. I really yeah. haven't seen most movies. So I made a concerted effort starting literally actually on Monday to watch as many movies as I can. And I talked to you about a couple of them. I've watched, so I started on Monday and we're taping this Tuesday night. I've watched 5 Christmas movies now in the last 36 hours. And I'm on my 6th as I actually paused this so we could tape the show. I've seen The Christmas Chronicles 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Claus now, which is a Netflix original from like 2019. I've seen The Night Before with Seth Rogen and, you know, a bunch of his friends
yep.
that I was seeing me in those movies. I've seen The Holiday with Kate Winslet. Yep. Matt Marino's wife recommended I watch that. So I did.
Okay.
And now I'm That's watching okay. The Ref. I don't have an opinion on The Ref because I'm just about 15 minutes in now. Let me say this, and I want to get
your Fred Claus. Have you done Fred Claus? I know you haven't done any.
I have not done Fred Claus yet. That will be on the list. I'm telling you right now, Aaron, on average, I mean, some days will be more than others. On average, I'm going to watch 2 to 3 movies a day. I'm going to tell you that right now. So by the time Christmas comes, I'll have a good 25, 30 of these.
A couple years ago, when my first son was born, I think he was 2. I went nuts and did what you're doing. And I watched every single Christmas movie on Netflix, Hulu. I downloaded every streaming app and I just consumed every possible Christmas movie.
It's fun.
It is fun.
It is fun. I'm enjoying it. I'm not going to lie. And you know, part of this happened a couple of years. And by the way, for everyone listening, we're going to talk Bills and NFL in a couple minutes. You know how Talking Buffalo podcast works. It's just the way it is, man. But anyway, part of the fun of being behind everyone else when it comes to things like, say, the Marvel movies, for an example, or Disney,
I'm way behind on those.
Or Disney movies. Yeah. Everyone saw all these movies that I didn't. So I got to enjoy all these for the first time. You know what I mean? So all these movies now that you know, I'm experiencing them for the first time. And it's cool, man. It's been good so far. All right, Christmas Chronicles 1, I loved it.
Oh,
I loved it. Now, you recommended that. I watched it on the recommendation to you. I thought it was really good. Kurt Russell is good. It was a good story, cheesy, the way it's supposed to be.
It was a good rendition of the story of Santa Claus and how Santa Claus interacts.
Yep.
That building that world, the Santa Claus with Tim Allen. I felt like that was, in its day, was a revolutionary idea of like,
how to see it.
Oh, bud, you're killing me.
I haven't seen it.
That's a good one too. And it breaks down a different way of how Santa Claus is. Because the beauty of Christmas, my kid, he's 5. And we don't have a chimney in our house. We have like a one that comes up, but we don't have a fireplace or anything. So he's been asking, he's like, how's Santa get in here? What's the deal? And there's just this magic of Christmas when you're a kid and how does it all work? Mm-hmm. And when these movies can build a world where it all works, I think Christmas Chronicles builds that world. And the first Christmas Chronicles builds it in such a cool, almost Harry Potter magical way. That I don't know that anyone's ever touched what they've been able to do. And as soon as I saw that movie, for me, that hopped right up into Christmas classics for me. And I think maybe in my top 10.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't watched that many to have the bar yet, but I'll tell you this. I liked it a lot. It's the kind of movie you could watch with your wife. It's the kind of movie you could watch with your teenage kid. It's the kind of movie you could watch with your young kid. I liked it a lot. Christmas Chronicles 2, I thought was kind of like almost like a money grab. I didn't like much about it at all.
I think there was a lot of pressure to make another one.
Yeah,
and I get it. Seemed rushed. Yeah.
Not a good sequel. If I ever power rank shitty sequels, that might make the list somewhere.
Yeah.
The Night Before with Seth Rogen.
Hilarious.
It was what I expected it to be, man. I expected it to be funny and stupid and sophomoric, mm-hmm. and that's exactly what it was. I will say this though, the scene at the church where he's on all those drugs and he pukes, and it's like, what do you say, how you lure instead of
how you lure.
That was funny. The Nutcracker Party, you know, trying to get into that was pretty fun. Miley Cyrus, she was a little bit cringy, that, you know, with the proposal scene where he's singing, that was kind of like, I don't know, but what I expected it to be, man. It wasn't a classic by any means, but it was a typical Seth Rogen make you laugh. And
for me, that's a must. I put that one on Christmas Eve after the kids are in bed. The wife and I watch it because it's super inappropriate.
You can't watch that one.
But it makes me laugh every time. And it's I think it's a really cool version of that, like, Scrooge story, that a classic Charles did, because they kind of build that in through the story as well, so it still stays on the Christmas theme and remains funny to me. It's hard because it's not a top 10, it's not like all the other Christmas movies, but it's a must watch for me every Christmas Eve.
Now, have you watched The Holiday before?
Yes.
Okay. Again, Matt Marino's wife told me I needed to watch it, so I did, and I trust her. I'll say this, it was all right.
It's okay.
It was okay. It was a nice ending. I think, first of all, by the way, Christmas movies, my rule of thumb, you better have a happy ending. There's no drama in Christmas movies at the end anyway. It's got to end happy. It was a nice ending. It was a sweet ending.
Yes.
Pretty good cast. I'm not even a big Cameron Diaz fan, but I kind of liked her in this movie a little bit.
She was fine. But
that said, I had two beefs with that movie. A, 2 hours and 14 minutes or something is too long for a Christmas movie. For a rom-com, and that's exactly what it was.
And you know how it's going. You know where that story's going.
Right. And look, as somebody who grew up a wrestling fan and has been trained and learned my whole life how to suspend belief, dude, there is no universe on the face of this earth where Jack Black's ever going to end up with Kate Winslet. Ever. It ain't ever happening. It's never going to happen. So yeah. I don't like Jack Black, by the way.
Really?
I think he's the most unfunny...
I'm a big Tenacious D fan. You don't like Tenacious D?
No, I don't. I don't like anything. I don't think Jack Black has ever made a movie or any skit or anything that I think is funny.
His movies aren't great. I don't like his movies, but I love Tenacious D. Yeah, I'm a big
fan. Yeah. All right. Well, fair enough. I would say that was like a C+. It was like a C+.
It's a next tier down. Somewhere I have a sheet of tiered Christmas movies, and it's on the second sheet, kind of in that middle.
All right. Well, this is the last one, and I'm interested in your take on this, because this was my personal favorite, and that was Klaus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is animated.
Klaus.
You're right. It's Klaus. Yeah, you're right. Yep. And that was like, it's new too. It only came out in 2019.
Yeah.
And again, it's on Netflix and it's an animated one. It's about it. It's a take, a creative and an innovative take, I think, on like the origins of Christmas and how it started. I really, really liked it a lot, man. It gave you all the feels. You know what I mean? It was really, really good. I was entertained throughout. Now, that movie ran a little bit long, too. Not quite. It wasn't 2 hours.
It does, but it keeps minutes. You.
But, right. But it was worth the time. You know what I mean? Like, I would rewatch that again. If it wasn't for the fact that I'm going to try to get to, like, 25, 30 movies over the next month or so, I would definitely want to rewatch that again. I gave that a solid, like, A or A- at worst. To me, that was probably the best of the five I've seen so far. Like, what was your take on that?
For me, it's right there. So I think I saw it maybe the same year Christmas Chronicles came out. I don't know if they came out in the same year or not. They were close.
1 year difference.
There was a 1 year difference. So it's up there for me. It's in my top 10 as well. So two newer movies entered my top 10. I'm not going to lie, dude. I cried the first time I watched it. Not a lot, a little bit, just a little bit when I don't want to spoil anything, but when Klaus, the wind disappears and he goes to be with his wife. Got me. Got that one. Got me right in the feels. It's got everything. It's funny. Norm MacDonald, my favorite comedian of all time.
I recognize his voice right away. I didn't look at the credits. I didn't know who any of the people
totally
were.
Totally recognizable.
But I recognized that voice immediately.
Yeah, it's just a really cool story, like you said. And it is a little long, but I think that you need to build up the story the way they do and explain who the guy is, why he's there, that town, and like really get that story. Because if you jump through that, how the town operates and everything like that, you miss the whole point. Yeah. Of the story. And so it's great. It's the one I probably look forward to the most to sit down with the whole family and watch because it's such a feel good story. And it's just, the animation's beautiful too. I don't love animated stuff all that much, but it's gorgeous. The way they did it's different. It's not CGI 3D animated. It's a really cool, pretty animation. It's just a really cool story. If you haven't seen it, anyone listening, absolutely, it's worth your time. For me, it's a top 10.
Emphasize the word story too, because it is a legitimately good story. Does a really good job of storytelling. I'll tell you what. So this is dropping December 1st. I want to have you out again one more time, sometime before Christmas.
Yeah.
And I don't even want to talk bills. We're going to have like a Talk Just About Christmas. Podcast Christmas episode. And by the time I talk to you again, I'll probably have 15 more movies.
Let's do
and
it.
And maybe we'll go through them. We'll do a Christmas. Well, I'm doing a Christmas Power movie rankings. Draft with Joe Yernan on Friday's show. But
why do you keep drafting with him? You lose almost every time.
I lose a lot. You do. Because I can't help myself. I know what plays well with the audience, but I just can't help myself. Every week, there's one or two picks that I always make that I know they're going to end up holding shitty, but I feel like I can't look myself in the mirror if I skip out on something that I really like. One last thing, too, by the way. Then we'll take a quick break. Then we're going to talk Bills, NFL. Thriller. I tweeted about this today. We're taping this. So as we tape this on Tuesday, the 30th of November, Thriller dropped 39 years ago on this date. Two things, man. Number one, that really makes me feel old. I am old. I'm okay with it. I remember it coming out. I remember that era. I'm old enough. I remember, I was still in grammar school, but I remember that album changed me, man. It changed my attitude. It changed my gear. I started wanting to look like Michael Jackson, as fucked up as that sounds, but laptop, at least clothes wise, you know, with the leather jacket and the black pants. Yeah. He was cool as hell. To me, that was the greatest album of all time. And then I tweeted that. And I think some people agreed, and somebody called it an most overrated album of all time. And said it wasn't even his best album.
That's silly. Stop. That's ridiculous.
Look, Off the Wall was good.
Yeah.
But Thriller, dude, 7 hits. There were 9 songs on the album, and 7 of them were smash
the title hits. Tracks, I tweeted it too. The title tracks, maybe one of the bottom 3 songs on that.
I agree. Look, Billie Jean, Beat It. I'm not even looking at it. I know they all like PYT, Want to Be Starting Something. Human Nature is a good song. I love
Criminally Underrated Human Nature.
And then he did which one was it with
Paul McCartney? Starting Something. Girl Is Mine.
The Girl Is Mine. Yeah, man.
Dude, that's a good song.
7 amazing songs.
The Lady in My Life. Lady in My Life's a great song.
Yeah, that's just an unbelievable album. So,
and people that like the influence that album had on the rest of music, hip hop, R&B, incredible. If you if I'm a big hip hop fan and samples, you find little bits and pieces of Thriller all over the place, man. I agree with you. I think it's the Bible of albums. I've never purchased an album more times than I've bought Thriller. Like I've had CDs that scratch and I'll immediately go get. Now I don't buy CDs and stuff anymore, but like in my 20s. So the album came out 82, right? I was born in 84, so I'm not even it was out before I was, but that album defining for me throughout my teenage years into my 20s. Like it was always in my car, always in my CD case. Like it really is just the standard. It's the gold standard, in my opinion. If you like R&B/pop music,
as somebody who grew up in the 80s and became a teenager in the 80s with the high school in the late 80s, it's the most defining thing of the entire decade to me. Like there's so many fashions and music and movies and stuff like that. But when I say 80s, I think of 80s, I immediately think of Michael Jackson. In the late 80s, the Bad Album, but especially in the early to mid 80s, just Thriller. Absolutely. And to me, it's the best, man. It really is.
He really is the king, not just the pop. I think he's the best entertainer, musician ever. And that's his best album. So if that's the best album of the best ever, then it's got to be the best album.
I understand why I don't agree with it, but I understand why some people hate him and just are never going to give him credit. Just like some people are never going to give R. Kelly credit for being, you know, an iconic R&B singer, or they're never going to give O.J. Simpson credit for being one of the best running backs ever. I get
although it. Although those guys, a little Michael Jackson's never been convicted
True.
Of anything he's been accused of. People have tried. People have tried to slap that onto him. He's never even been dealt with in a civil suit, I don't believe, or found guilty in any type of civil suit. I think there was a lot of trashing of him. He's a weird dude. I'll give everybody that. Some of the stuff he did was probably inappropriate optics or whatever. But here's the thing, man. I don't listen to music. But just like football players, man, I don't watch football for morals and my guiding principles in life. And I don't listen to musicians for the same. I listen to rap music, man. If I was listening to, like, come on. Like, these people are, I'm not looking to them for my morals and stuff. But if you throw some MJ on, dude, my toes are tapping. I'm getting going. My whole mood changes. I love anything MJ, even the bad ones. You throw Michael Jackson on my stereo, dude, my mood changes. I love it.
Good luck being at a bar or club or wherever and having Billie Jean come on and the whole bar's not dancing, you know, or the whole club's not dancing. Good luck.
Absolutely.
That shit ain't happening. All right, we're going to take a really quick break. More on the other side. Aaron Quinn, cover one. We're going to talk some Buffalo Bills.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
All right, back with Aaron. That was fun. I like talking Christmas and movies and Michael.
Before we get into Bills, because you brought up Michael, I've seen a couple of female vocalist lists. I know you like female vocalists, R&B vocalists.
I do.
I'm sick of the disrespect to Janet. We can have another conversation about this at some point, but Janet not being on these lists, even with Beyonce over Janet, I'm not having it.
We did a draft last week. Joe Yurden and I was best female vocalist of the last 40 years, and neither of us drafted Janet. So I know
that's
that
wouldn't
make you happy.
Ridiculous. She's so talented. All right, let's keep going.
She's good. Well, I guess I want to start here. With the Trey White injury, I'm just going to ask you this straight up. Do you think Brandon Bean deserves criticism right now for standing pat this year at the trade deadline because of what might have happened or what could have happened to Trey White and ultimately did? You look at this team, and it wasn't like they were rock solid the week before. Now they played Jacksonville after the trade deadline. I think things might have been different had that game happened before. But he decided to stand pat, and sometimes maybe a general manager spends so much of their focus worried about the future that they don't see what's in front of them. And I feel like the Bills lack depth at a couple positions, and corner was one of them. So we'll start there. Do you think he deserves criticism right now? Like, if I'm not necessarily doing it, but if I were to sit here and levy a lot of criticism to Brandon Bean, do you think he deserves it?
This one's tough for me, Pat, because I don't know that he stood pat, right? I don't know what conversations he was having. It takes two to make a trade. I believe very firmly that Brandon Bean was looking into things. I think he was making calls into a lot of the names that you would suspect would be on the trade on the trade block, things like that. Not a lot of trades happened in the league, right? Just a handful of trades, and there were big ones we heard of. And if you look at those teams, what have those trades done? Von Miller getting traded to the Rams. The Rams haven't won a game since they got Von Miller. So mid-season football trades, it sounds sexy. It's a ton of fun to talk about. This isn't the NBA. Right. This isn't the NHL. These things don't happen very often. And when they do, there isn't a ton of historical indicators that show that that turns into success for teams. Now, at that time, at the trade deadline, I heard almost nobody talking about cornerback at that point. We all felt pretty good. Levi's having a good year. Taron Johnson's having an all pro caliber season, and Trey was playing well. And not that I think there's probably people concerned about that. Well, what if a Trey White goes down, or what if Levi, you know, and Dane has to come in and play? There's some of those conversations that we're having, but I don't think anyone expected it to happen. All the conversations were around off interior offensive line that I was hearing from people, which I do agree. I think that's probably the other position besides cornerback that doesn't have a lot of depth. But if you look league wide, I don't think any teams have a lot of depth at interior offensive line or cornerback. Like, I think every team's trying to get more of that for themselves as well. So it's hard for me to sit there and put a lot of blame on Bean not knowing what phone calls he made and what types of conversations he was having to address those things. And hindsight's 2020, right? Like, now that Trey White's hurt and now for the year, of course, we're all going to feel panicked because, and here's the thing, Pat, there's not a guy that they were going to bring in through trade or whatever that's going to replace Trey White and the impact that Trey White has on this defense. And so you're going to have a drop off really no matter what. I think you made a point earlier this week that maybe some fair criticism could be on the lack of bringing in more in the off season, right? Yeah. Not that he's worked out particularly well for Tampa, but Richard Sherman was a guy that I was pounding the table for. There's a few names that were out there that were veteran available.
Steven Nelson was a very
Steven Nelson was another one. Yes. Some guys like that. So I think maybe there's some fair criticism there, but then you saw how well Levi Wallace played, and what we were wanting was not a replacement for if Trey gets hurt, but depth for cornerback two and push some of that depth down. But then you saw how well Levi's playing, and you know, I've stand for Levi here on Twitter, and but he's had a really good year. He's actually exceeded my expectations. I'm not sure how he's gonna play going forward, having to take on that cornerback one role, but as a cornerback two, I think he's above average and more than holding his own there. So it's tough, man. You hate to see a Trey White go down, but nobody's gonna replace that void. I don't think that there's anyone out there, and we don't know what Dane Jackson is. I believe Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, when they talk about the confidence that they have in Dane Jackson. This summer, Brandon Bean said that he thought Dane Jackson was going to be a great player. Like, I don't know that he's thrown that out so willy-nilly before. I know that they've talked about their players in positive lights. And then McDermott came out and said today, you know, that they are confident in him. So now's the time to find out what you got in Dane Jackson, right? He couldn't beat out Levi, but I think this summer people thought, hey, he can't beat out Levi. Levi sucks. Man, Dane Jackson must really suck. But now you're seeing, okay, he couldn't beat out Levi, but Levi is actually really good cornerback too. So maybe Dane Jackson doesn't suck. Maybe he just wasn't as good as Levi Wallace was this summer.
That's a fair point. And I'll say this in regards to Levi Wallace. I don't want to sit here and say I think he's one of the better CB2s in the NFL, because I would be saying that without really knowing much, if anything, about most of the CB2s around the league. So sure. I really... to sit here and compare him to, you know, the second cornerback for Dallas or the Rams or, you know, seven other teams, I don't know them well enough to compare. I will say this. I think he has been very, very good this year. And if he is or was the weak link of this secondary, it sure as shit ain't because he hasn't played well. It's just because you got Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, and Trey White as the other three guys. And Teron Johnson, yeah, if you want to add him too as well.
And then two good middle linebackers in coverage, right?
So, yeah, if he's the weak link of this, you know, back seven, it's just because of how talented everyone else is, man. The guy has played, put it this way, he's exceeded my expectations. And I remember you, especially with you, we've had many conversations about Levi Wallace. And I thought at best he was an adequate number two at best. And he's more than an adequate number two. He's played well.
This year.
Yeah, absolutely this year. Put it this way. He's going to get paid. He ain't signing for 1 year and $1.2 million this offseason. I'm going to tell you that right now. If it ain't going to be the Bills, someone is going to pay this guy more than $1.2
million. He's got a real chance now to earn himself a paycheck.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you. Absolutely. So, I mean, you sort of answered it for me anyway. So, if we're not going to levy any criticism to Brandon Bean for standing pat at the trade deadline, which for the reasons you explain is perfectly understandable, they basically decided that Dane Jackson was going to be the third corner in April.
Yeah.
You know, they took to no surprise, a defensive end. And but then they came back with another defensive tackle. And then they came back with an offensive tackle in round three, which I, at the time, I did not like that. I thought that was puzzling because they had Dawkins and Darrell Williams. Great pick that turned out to be.
But then now we need them.
Damn, shit. But, you know, then they came back with another offensive tackle. Basically, what I'm saying is they literally ignored corner until, what, the sixth round of the draft. So they kind of punted that, and they didn't sign any veteran free agents, which over the last couple of years, they've done that. They've had Josh Norman. They've had Gaines. They've had, although he quit, but Vontae Davis. You know, they have signed cornerback veterans for depth. They did not do that this year. So are you surprised? It's easy now to be an armchair quarterback because Trey White said, you know, unfortunately went down. And also, too, you put something out on Twitter. I never saw what you said. You had a tweet earlier in the week that said, if you can rank, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but 1 to 10, your confidence level in Dane Jackson as a CB2. I'll give you my take. But before that, what was yours? Like, what's your confidence level? I'm going to pose that question to you. Between a 1 and 10, where's your confidence level with him right now?
This is tough for me. I'll tell you what I do like. I like Dane Jackson in this Monday night matchup against New England because one thing that Dane Jackson is actually really good at is run support. The guy's a hell of a tackler. And that's actually probably the flaw in Trey White's game. Trey White, not a great tackler. And I think against a team like New England where they're, you know, Mac Jones is a Trent Edwards type where he's getting the ball out and relying on yards after catch, you need good tackling. And obviously they're a good run team, so you need good run support. So I feel confident in him being a good fit for this particular game. Outside of that, for me, on a scale of 1 to 10, I think maybe at CB2, I feel like I'm at a 6 with him right now. Just a little bit above average. I think that he can be an adequate cornerback too in the NFL. I think he's got the same similar type flaws that Levi Wallace has, which is a little bit of lack of athleticism for the position. The thing that he has right now that Levi Wallace didn't have at this point in his career is he is aggressive at the point of attack at the ball. And he's a better tackler right now than Levi Wallace was at that point. Now, Levi's gotten better at tackling. And this year, I think the leap that we've seen from Levi Wallace is he's attacking the ball aggressively. You've seen it with the interceptions. You've seen it with some of the PBUs that he's been able to get. So I think he's got a little bit more of the aggression that we haven't seen out of Levi. Now, he just has to refine knowing where to be. The thing that the reason Levi won that job, Levi's always where he's supposed to be in this defense. You heard Josh McDaniels come out today. I retweeted it. Cover One retweeted it. Josh McDaniels came out. Matt Fairburn is the one that tweeted it originally, saying that this Bills defense is probably the biggest test for New England so far. And the reason is they play as a single unit. And that is, you know, people talk about 1 of 11. And I know your friend Buffalo Wins would scoff at all the coach speak of 1 of 11 and all that stuff.
Would.
But it matters on the defensive side. They have a particular scheme that they run. And if everybody's where they're supposed to be in that scheme, they believe more times than not that scheme is going to beat whatever you can throw at it. As long as you're where you're supposed to be and you're disguising coverage and getting back to where you're supposed to be, you're going to be in position to make a play. That's how they believe in this scheme. And if Dane Jackson can get that and be at his points and then attack the ball when he has opportunities, I think he can be a pretty good cornerback too in this league. I do believe that. So right now for me, it's a 6. We'll see. He's going to get tested. That is where the ball is going when people put the ball in the air, and for good reason. Nobody knows who he is. You don't want to test Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, Tremaine Edmonds, Taron Johnson right now. You're going to try to test Dane Jackson.
I would say my confidence level is a little bit lower than that. I would say it's roughly a 5, and it would be lower than a 5. It's lower because, and you made a fair point about Levi Wallace. All summer long, all we talked about, whether I had you on or lots of Bills content creators, the main training camp battle, Wallace first, Dane Jackson, that was what everyone was excited to see. There were other battles, but that was the big one. And it never materialized. It never even came close to materializing. And my thought at the time was, well, Dane Jackson must really be under achieving or, you know, just not impressing anybody. Mm-hmm. But maybe it was, and I'm hoping you're right. Maybe it was just Levi just really stepped up and was playing as well. I mean, these coaches, by the way, they're not just starting to praise Levi Wallace today and Monday. Right. They've been praising him all year, and for good reason, because I think he's played pretty goddamn good. So maybe that, I'm hoping that's why that battle never materialized, because I really expected to see this knockdown, drag out battle, and it never happened.
Well, keep in mind on that battle, it was a perception that there was no battle, because every time Leslie Frazier was asked about it, people tried to find out, is Levi Wallace your starting cornerback? He would say that that battle was still going on. So in the practices, I think in Leslie Frazier's mind, that was a battle. And we didn't see it materialize. And I think they gave the edge to Levi in terms of seniority and continuity on the back seven, because he'd been in this defense and played with those guys for a few years. So I think Levi had that edge going into it, but I think it was probably more of a battle than we thought. And I think Dane Jackson also got a little bit banged up in this preseason for a couple of weeks, which hurt his ability to be in that battle. Yeah. So I think some hindsight that, I think what it is the optics that how people felt about Levi Wallace going into training camp, and that you saw that Kansas City game and we were like, Jesus, we need speed. Guys like Levi Wallace are getting burnt. This is a huge problem. He's the weak link on the defense. So everybody had this mindset that Levi sucks. We need to move on from Levi. And they just assumed, well, gosh, if Dane Jackson can't even beat this guy out, then he's no good too. And I don't think that's the case.
All right. That's fair. I would say this too. What gives me confidence, and I know this is a boring homer kind of take, but I'm gonna say it, Brandon Bean's not above criticism. You know, I think he has not been perfect. I think the offensive line has been sort of a mess.
Yeah,
and I mean,
bringing back the interior offensive line was a huge mistake.
Yeah So I mean, the guy's not perfect, but when you win, you get the benefit of the doubt until proven otherwise. And they felt good enough about Dane Jackson that they did not allocate any significant money to anybody in free agency at corner or in their draft. So that tells me that organizationally, they certainly have confidence in Dane Jackson. Now we're going to see. I would say this. The good would be, there's not a lot of great receivers in the AFC. I mean, you got Tyreek Hill. Obviously, you play the Chiefs, you know, if you play them in the
playoffs. In the box.
You know, but teams, I'm thinking of how many teams got more than one really good receiver. Now, even if, you know, forget Dane Jackson, Levi Wallace match up against Tyreek Hill is
don't
scary
like
as shit. Yeah. don't like that shit at all. But aside from them, there's not a lot of teams that like have receivers in the AFC that I'm horrified of if they were to meet them in the playoffs. I don't like to match up with Charger receivers. I don't like to match up with Bengal receivers. But there's not a lot, you know what I mean? There's not A.J. Brown and Julio Jones if they're both 100% healthy, which I don't even know if that's going to happen this year if they were to face Tennessee. I don't know. There's not as many great receivers in the AFC, so I'm not that concerned. But on the other side, now this is kind of a question that I'm asking you as a football person.
Okay.
Because maybe some people don't look at it this way. All right, so you got Jackson and you got Levi Wallace. And Dane Jackson is obviously the weak link for the time being now of the secondary, just like Levi was at one time. Are you concerned, or would the Bills had to compensate a little too much for that? What I mean is like getting him more help than they normally would with Levi Wallace being the CB2, you know, having to have Jordan Poyer or Micah Hyde kind of doubling, or, you know, just things like that, or having an extra linebacker kind of doubling up where he's supposed to be to give him help might expose other areas of this defense now that wouldn't have been an issue had Trey not gone down.
I think what you're going to see sans Trey White is some of the spots where you would like to play man coverage, and that teams force you to play. Like, there's some scenarios, and this is what the Bills struggled with last year, right? With Kansas City, where a team sort of forces you into man coverage, you don't have the horses. And even last year, the athleticism, why the Bills struggled with that. They've been a little bit better this year. I think that's where you see the impact of losing Trey, is the ability to go into man coverage a lot of teams. I think there's some teams you can get by. I think this weekend is one where if it's a third and long, I think you can feel pretty confident that you can go, you know, Nelson Aguilar and Kendrick Bourne. They're fine. They can make plays on the ball, but these guys aren't world beaters necessarily. I think when you go up against the box, you don't want to get into man coverage with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin with either of these cornerbacks. So I think it's going to be game plan dependent, but I think some of those scenarios where they would rather go man because it's the smarter defense to play in a scenario, they might have to go to quarters coverage or might have to do something where they are rolling protections to make sure that Dane doesn't get beat on a double move or beat deep because of his lack of athleticism. So there's some to that. But I do think that's the benefit of having a Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, right? Like, you use that strength to your advantage, that they're such good safeties and that they can allow you to compensate for guys that maybe aren't as athletic or as good on the edges, because they cover so much ground and they can disguise coverage so well and get to their spot. So I think that's a benefit, again, of having the best safety duo in the NFL.
Pass rusher is decent this year, but I think it needs to be better down the stretch. You know, and if they're going to go far into the playoffs, I think being able to get pressure most of the time with four, occasionally blitzing, but most of the time with four, they've been okay.
They've been one of the best at pressure.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel so. Our boy Nate, after one of the games, between like, this team can't get any pressure at all. I disagree. They're one of the better pass rush win rate teams in the league. It's getting sacks. Sacks aren't everything.
No, they're not.
I do want more. I always want more. But we see it almost weekly. Mario Addison impacting a guy, making a guy throw the ball out of bounds, making it so he can't throw to his lane. It's there. It's got to hit home more.
Every time I think he's washed up, he has a good game.
Yeah,
Addison.
He's a good player, especially in this limited.
Better than I give him credit for. I'll admit that.
So and Jerry still got some juice.
Yeah, he does. I like Jerry Hughes. Look, the pass rush has been okay.
Rousseau's fallen in the pass rush a little bit.
In the pass rush, he has. I think he's played pretty well against the run. I even a dummy like me noticed that last week. Yep. I'm like, he's setting the edge well. He's playing good against the rush, which, you know, that's another conversation for another time, because you start thinking about Owa, who was the next pick. He looks really good with Baltimore. Well, Jalen Phillips was picked ahead of him, so there wasn't much they could do. But this has turned out to look like a pretty good defensive end rookie class.
Yeah.
A couple other things.
And how about Ed Oliver, if we're talking about pressures? How about Ed?
He should be almost said all pro. He could be a pro bowler this year.
He won't, because he doesn't have the box score.
Right. He doesn't have the numbers.
But this dude, man, I think there was a lot of anxiety amongst Bills fans because of where he was picked and the comps to Aaron Donald, that he has to come and be this world beater wrecker. And he wasn't. And now he's not getting the stats like Aaron Donald. But dude, when you flash on the tape, this guy is blowing things up on the interior offensive line. It's really fun to watch. I think the front of that defense starts with Ed Oliver, and that's pretty cool.
You know what my favorite thing about Ed Oliver right now is? If there's one silver lining from Star Lotulelei being out with COVID, it's that I heard a lot of people say, well, you know, Oliver's only better because Star's in there. Well, Star's been out the last two games, and I think Ed Oliver's been the best player on the defense the last 2 weeks between the Saints. And he might have been like one of the few guys to even show up for that Colts game. You know what I mean?
Was pissed in that Saints game that they didn't give him a turkey leg at the end of the game. Yeah, I know everybody loves offense, but
I tweeted about it.
Dude, Ed Oliver crushed that whole game.
Jordan Poyer came and stole that bite of the turkey. I'm like, where's Ed Oliver's egg? He absolutely deserved that. Now, big news this week, Star is back. Spencer Brown is back. They're off COVID. Obviously, that is very good news for the
Feliciano Bills, back at practice.
Which is funny because I'm not a big John Feliciano guy, but after seeing Cody Ford and Ike Bakker these last handful of weeks, John Feliciano is actually a welcome sight for me.
I don't know
if he's going to be able to play yet, though.
Greg and I go back and forth on this because he knows how much I don't like John Feliciano. I don't know if John Feliciano, like, for me, him and Bakker, it's a coin flip. I think Bakker might be a little bit better of a pass blocker, which I care more about. That big, expensive dude that's dropping back to pass, that's the only thing in the world I care about, is keep that guy clean. But I don't even if he is a better pass blocker, it's not by much. These guys are both rotational interior linemen league-wide.
Yeah, Spencer Brown's a big one. He makes right tackle better, and Darrell Williams is...
And right guard.
What the hell happened to Darrell Williams, by the way? Who, by the way, has played okay. He's played pretty decent at guard this year, but he has been every bit to me. And again, I don't have analytics, and I don't know how to grade, and I'm not a film guru, but Darrell Williams has sucked at right tackle this year, dude. He's been every bit as bad to me at right tackle as Cody Ford or Bakker has been on the inside, or Feliciano for that matter as well. I mean, Deion Dawkins has struggled too. I want to see more consistency from Deion. Deion's been inconsistent. Darrell Williams has just been bad at right tackle. What happened in 1 year? He earned his paycheck playing right tackle last year.
I have a little bit of a theory to this, and I'm not an offensive line guru. Offensive line, in my opinion, is the hardest thing to watch and grade and do. Brandon Thorne on Twitter is great at it. Russell Brown, a guy on Cover One, he does a lot of the draft work.
He's good.
Eric's pretty good with offensive line too. For me, I don't understand it. I don't understand offensive line play, so it's hard. But my theory on this is Deion Dawkins talked about this when he was able to play next to Richie Incognito, and talking about that who you play next to matters. And I do think that that's true. I think that you see a dip in production when it's Cody Ford next to Daryl Williams and Ike Bakker or John Feliciano next to Deion Dawkins, I think that that does matter. And we see it in Mitch Morse. You look at the PFF grades for Mitch Morse, they look terrible, but I don't think Mitch Morse looks terrible. It's he's making up for these two not really good guys playing next to him. I think the offensive line, it matters who you play next to. I don't know if that has everything to do with the dip and play at the tackles, but I think it might have something to do with it.
A couple other things too. Isaiah McKenzie last week got benched. That scratch, healthy scratch for Marquez Stevenson. Also, Vernon Butler was a healthy scratch as well. He's been scratched before, so that wasn't like really shocking.
Sure, yeah, he should
kind of surprising about Isaiah. Now, it doesn't mean quite maybe so much on the field, and it didn't really mean anything at all in the Saints game anyway. Right. But do you feel like that was McDermott sending a message to this team?
Absolutely.
You know, based on I have a friend who – he had a fair point, and he said something along the lines of this team's too happy. They're not serious enough. And I know that kind of on the surface kind of sounds stupid, but like too much funny games. Like this was this last week, the Saints have felt much more businesslike. Like, I don't know. I'm not saying Isaiah McKenzie's a goofball. Don't get me wrong. And I know the fumble had a lot to do with what ultimately happened. But anyway, were you surprised that happened? And obviously, I mean, you agree. It was definitely a message to the team from Sean McDermott, right?
Yeah, no, I think, Zach Moss going to the bench too. He was a scratch. Butler and McKenzie, I think that was absolutely hey, we're on notice now. The time for games is over. We backed ourselves into a corner. The room for error is very small now. And I think that was sending a message to everyone on the team that like these types of things can't go on. Now, one thing I want to address, the Isaiah McKenzie thing, it wasn't a one play thing. I saw a lot of people talking like, oh, how they can't believe they benched him over one fumble. This has been going on. And I had a lot of people tell me, you know, because we live in the moment, right? And so like McKenzie will have a big play or a game where he gets a couple big returns. Everyone's like, dude, the return game's fine. We got Isaiah McKenzie. He's so explosive. But he has made mistakes all year long. That Washington game, that kickoff, forgetting the rules of kickoff and letting a ball bounce. Like, dude, that's totally unacceptable. And sure, the only reason that wasn't big play is Kumro recovered it. Otherwise, we'd be still talking about that one. He a number of times didn't come up and aggressively attack the ball to secure it, allowing balls to bounce. Fair catching when he had 10, 15 yards free. Like there's been a number of mistakes, and this isn't some dude that's like a 2-3 year guy in the league that's trying to figure it out. This guy, he's like 27 years old. He's been in the league for 4 or 5 years. Like this is who he is. Like he's told us who he is. He had a chance to change that narrative this year, and he's only increased it. And a couple weeks ago before that fumble, I was already concerned every time the ball went in the air. I was like, oh, man, I don't know what Isaiah McKenzie we're going to get. It's either going to be a great return or it's going to turn into something bad. And I think in that Colts game, you started to see teams were willing to kick, like as explosive as he is, if he was that good, teams wouldn't allow them to kick to him. I think teams were kicking to him because they know like, hey, this guy is probably could mess up. As just as much as he could take one to the house, he could drop this thing and it could be a big play for us.
That was, I noticed that too. It was strategic. I noticed in the Saints game, I don't remember the returner for the Saints, but Tyler Bass could kick the ball through the end zone most of the time, especially in a dome. He kept kicking the ball up to the Saints and letting them return it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, a little bit short. Do you think that was a 1 week message, or do you think now like Stevenson's in this lineup to stay for the foreseeable future? Like come Monday night, do you think Isaiah is going to be another healthy scratch?
Yeah, I mean, so McKenzie took to Twitter and then deleted it and saying he was out for the year.
Yeah.
And that he was benched for the year. And I believe him when he said that. I think that, dude, there's a lot. Like, I like Sean McDermott a lot. And I think he's a perfect fit for building the culture and all that stuff. He's not a guy I want to be on his shit list. Like, what Greg and I talk about all the time on these bad games, that Jacksonville game, like, I wouldn't want to show up to work and get in the film room with Sean McDermott after a game like that. Like he's so detail oriented and all about, you know, growth mindset and getting better that I wouldn't want to be on the other end of a Sean McDermott rampage. And so I mean, unless Stevenson really messes up, this one's going to be a tough week with New England. New England's a really good special teams team, really well coached. And you have a rookie who doesn't have a lot of experience who did have a bit of a muff last game. He made a mistake, put the ball on the ground. how does New England attack that? Like, this might be one, but I think if it's definitely Stevenson rolling out there, I don't think we see Mike McKenzie again for the rest of the year, unless Stevenson just vomits all over himself.
Whatever happens, God, I just hope that this game doesn't come down to special teams.
Oh my God.
I don't want it to come down to special teams. That will concern me. One more thing, Bill's thing. It's not really a question for you. It's just something I got to note though. Dawson Knox has played really well this year. 7 touchdowns now, franchise record for tight ends. He's already got 31 catches, 415 yards. You know, if Brandon Bean, we were talking about, or at least I was posting the question to you, if he deserves criticism for some things. One thing he deserves a lot of praise for is not caving in the pressure to make a deal and spend big money on a tight end. This organization was definitely patient with Dawson Knox, a lot more than a lot of fans and, you know, maybe at times myself were. And they're being rewarded for it because I think he's turning, forget the numbers. I think he's turning into a legitimate asset for this offense. I really like what I'm seeing from him this entire year.
Yeah. I mean, people that haven't listened to me before are probably going to think I'm some smug asshole that just sits around and takes victory laps on all the players I was right about. But dude, I was on this podcast. I know this summer, this offseason, I was on this podcast telling you that I didn't need any other tight ends, Dawson Knox was a tight end one in the making. He was right there. He was showing all the signs. And again, similar to Levi Wallace, he's exceeded what I thought we would get out of him. And I think that he is a legitimate weapon in this offense that Josh Allen looks to, and that I want to see. You know, everybody's talking about feed Diggs, and that's a narrative that I don't even believe is true. I think they're totally feeding Stephon Diggs like a true number one wide receiver. I want to see finding ways to get Dawson Knox the ball more. I think he's the best yards after catch target that the Bills have right now. I think he's got a vertical aspect to his game where he can stretch the seam like this guy, and his blocking is awesome. Watch his block, and this guy can get in there and block with people. So I think he's solidified himself as a true tight end one. I think maybe the only criticism would be you let Hollister go. I don't know that there's a good tight end two option on this team. I'm not sold on Sweeney. So the depth of tight end could be upgraded, but this is the thing, man. Ed Oliver, Tremaine Edmonds, Dawson Knox, like, we see players around the league that come in and immediately have the impact that they were drafted to have. But more times than not, it takes time to develop into an NFL star player, especially a position like tight end. And we just need to give these guys time. It's hard because we want everything now. People play Madden and they just throw their players in and they're good. We want that to happen, but it does take time. And Dawson Knox is right on the timeline for where you, a raw tight end with no experience really playing the position, freak athleticism, he's right on that timeline of where he should be at this point in his career. And you're starting to see the fruits of that patience by Brandon Bean and his staff pay off in a big way right now.
I really like him. I still wish he'd be a little bit more consistent with the hands, but yeah. You know what? Sometimes you just look, players have flaws. They have warts. They Absolutely. All do. And it's just something we're going to have to live with. But with all the positive things he's doing, it far outweighs some of the mistakes he still makes. Two things around the NFL, and then I'm going to get you out of here. Number one, so Sunday night I'm watching the Browns Ravens, and I know, and I watched the entire freaking game. All right, man, and it was ugly. Okay, it was really ugly. Lamar Jackson threw it, which is kind of leading to my point. So Lamar Jackson, for all you know, he makes great plays, but he threw 4 interceptions. He wasn't even the worst quarterback on the field that night.
No.
4 interceptions, and he's still not even the worst quarterback on the field that night. Baker Mayfield, man. And obviously, as the Bills fan in me, I wanted Cleveland to beat Baltimore because it would have benefited the Buffalo Bills. Baker Mayfield, thank God for Josh Allen. You know, if you want to make an argument that he's not playing quite as good as last year, I personally don't necessarily agree with it. But if you want to make that argument, it's certainly something we could discuss. But be thankful that you have Josh Allen in Buffalo, folks, because I look at Baker Mayfield in Cleveland, and now in fairness, the dude's banged up. Okay, I'm going to give him that. He is banged up, okay? But he's never lacked an offensive line. He's never lacked pass catchers. He's got two of the best defense. Running backs. I would kill for either of those running backs to be a Buffalo Bill, Chubb or Kareem Hunt. Hell, Dearness Johnson, for that matter, their third running back. I'd love to see him be a Buffalo Bill. This team's got a lot of weapons, and this guy stinks, man. He's just not good. Is Baker Mayfield to you, and I'm not going to, you know, ask you to go through him, is Baker Mayfield even a top 15 quarterback? I thought about it. I'm going to run off 12 names to you, Aaron, and I don't even really think these are a debate. So Josh Allen, Mahomes, Herbert, Lamar Jackson, Joey Burrow, Dak Prescott, Kyler Murray, Stafford, Russell Wilson, even run down, looking washed up lately, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Derek Carr. I don't even think there's a question. All those quarterbacks are definitely better than Baker Mayfield, right? That's 12 right there. That's 12 right there. And then you got probably better Tannehill, maybe still.
I think Tannehill's definitely better.
Yeah, all right. Well, then there you go. Right off the bat, that's 13 right there. And then you got that category of, you know, we can debate like a Carson Wentz or Kirk Cousins or Matt Ryan at this point of his career. You know what I mean? And then there's guys who are still a little too early, like Mac Jones, Trevor Lawrence, you know, guys like this. This guy is not a top half of the NFL quarterback right now. And if you're the Cleveland Browns and you got all this money invested in talent around the field, did they even give him a fifth year, let alone try to sign him to a long-term extension?
It's tough. This might be a Mitch Trubisky type situation, right?
Sure.
Early draft pick. I think the Bears invested a lot around Trubisky to try to make him the guy, maybe not as much at the wide receiver position as Baker Mayfield's been able to have. The thing that's the weirdest about Baker, and we knew it, and I hate to say Colin Coward was right about anything, but it's the attitude, dude. Like, even to this day where, you know, fans were booing him, rightfully, the fans were booing that offense, and he comes out in the media and he's like, all those stupid fans, like the stupid fans that don't even know how to cheer. Like, he just sounds like a petulant child. Like, he doesn't have what it takes to be, in my opinion, a leader of an NFL franchise. Like,
players' fathers are going at him. Multiple.
Yeah, dude.
Multiple.
Yeah, dude. It's not good. And when you have your wife coming to defend you on social media, like, none of this is good. Yeah, I think he's running up his course in Cleveland. When he got hurt and Case Keenum came in to replace him, my first thought was, shit, that's not like a big drop off to Case Keenum. Like, I think he's basically Case Keenum. Like, I don't think that that's a far stretch to say that he's a probably low tier NFL starter. I think he's down there with the Fitzpatricks and Tyrods of the world in terms of maybe if the situation's exactly right and he's healthy, you can win with him. I don't think you can win because of Baker Mayfield. And we've seen on display when the running backs are hurt, this team is atrocious. They struggle to move the ball. So it's surprising to me because I was really high on Mayfield during that draft process. Like, he has all that accuracy and you saw him with the ability to move the ball, but it has not translated so far into the NFL. I do think the injury has something to do with his lack of production this year, but I don't know. The injury might be something, but there's something broken in terms of this guy's not fit to be a leader of an NFL franchise. And people can say all they want about the cliches of football and the coach speak of football. And, you know, Josh Allen comes off as that, oh, shucks, oh, golly kind of guy. But, like, it matters what kind of leader you have as the face of your franchise. And when times get tough, who is that person? And Baker Mayfield, to me, has exposed himself as a very immature, not ready to lead an NFL organization as the number one guy.
I agree. And look, he's had 4 years, and I don't think Cleveland's really, they're too talented to be where they're at. That, you know, they, like, last year they were 11-5, right? But two losing seasons, and they're only 6-5 right now. I could see this being an offseason where they move on from him, whether it's one of the guys you just mentioned, Mr. Trubisky, who knows, you know, he's going to be a free agent. Maybe that turns out to be an opportunity for him. Or they trade
Garoppolo.
For like a, I just thought of that, Jimmy Garoppolo. That could be a really good fit as well. I think these guys, that team's too good to only be 6-5. And I'm not a Baker Mayfield guy, and it just bothers me. Last thing here. So the AFC and the NFC, if you sat here and told me I'm confident the Bills are going to the Super Bowl, I'd say you're full of shit. If you told me the Ravens, I'd say you're full of shit. The Chiefs, full of shit. I don't think there's any one team head and shoulders above anyone else.
Right.
So what I want to ask you this, certainly for the AFC, and maybe if you could come up with one for the NFC, and I couldn't, I'm going to tell you that straight up, because I thought on this. Name me a team right now that you think is in the AFC conference that is kind of like going under the radar, a team that, you know, everyone's talking about top seeds or, you know, teams going to the Super Bowl, a team that people are sleeping on that maybe they shouldn't be sleeping on. Can you think of a team? Because I got one.
Sleeping on, that's tough. I don't know that. So Indy, but I don't know that they're being slept on, but I think Indy's a lot better than they're not being talked about in that conversation of teams that could go on a run and be a top team. Their record looks bad because of where they started this year. They had a tough loss this past weekend to the Bucks. That was a good game, man. Tom Brady did a Tom Brady thing.
It
was a fun game. And they still, that return at the end, they still had a chance, like, yeah, with almost no time left. Carson Wentz, man, I think Twitter unjustly buried Carson Wentz after a terrible year in Philly. That offensive line that they put out in Philly should have, it's almost criminal what they put him behind in Philly a year ago. Now, he regressed, absolutely. Like, his mechanics went to shit. He had a terrible season. But I think people just wanted to write him off as, this guy sucks, he's no good. And so the Bills, in my opinion, should have never won that game against the Colts in the playoffs. I believe the Colts won that game by every single measure in the playoffs. They dominated the Bills in the trenches. They had the Bills up against the wall. If it wasn't for, after Pittman didn't get that 2-point conversion or that fourth down play on the goal line, they didn't convert that. Josh makes a couple passes. That's the game. The Gabe Davis drive, that's the change of that game. Otherwise, the Bills don't deserve to win that football game. They go and get Carson Wentz. In my opinion, I was like, I don't know how much worse he is than an old Phillip Rivers. Like, I think this team could still be a real good team if they get
plays well against the Bills, man.
Played well against the Bills, and he doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be gaudy. He didn't play great against the Bills. He was just efficient. Like, he just kept the ball moving. And so I think they're a team, I don't want to meet them in the playoffs. I don't want to see Jonathan Taylor in that offensive line in the playoffs. That defense is solid. Want nothing to do with them. Well coached. So maybe, I don't know if they're a sleeper. And then the other team is, it's if they get clicking and they live and die by their quarterback, but the Chargers, they have the talent to do something special. They just can't seem to click it all together with any type of consistency. And if Herbert's playing poorly, that whole team plays poorly. If he's playing well, they can play with anybody in the league. So if he gets going, it's all about getting hot at the right time. If they can get hot at the right time, maybe. But that division's all, everyone in their division's like 6 wins, right? Like, they're stock. They drop one more game, that might be it for them. But those would be my sleepers in the AFC.
Let me say this. I think there's, here's the team. There's 4 teams in the AFC that I think nationally are talked about plenty enough that they're not sleepers. Obviously, Buffalo's one of them. I would say New England at this point, they're not a sleeper anymore.
Yeah,
New England's right up there. I mean, try turning ESPN on for more than 10 minutes in the morning and not hearing about the New England Patriots. Obviously, the Kansas City Chiefs. And then the Baltimore Ravens with Lamar Jackson. And plus, they currently have the best record in the conference. I'm going to throw a team out at you that I think is a sleeper. The Cincinnati Bengals. How about the Cincinnati Bengals? All right, so listen, they're 7-4. They killed Pittsburgh on Sunday, which maybe that's not that big of a deal, okay? They beat the Raiders. They smacked the shit out of the Baltimore Ravens in Baltimore. They lost in overtime to Green Bay, and they should have beat the Packers. Mm-hmm. So they've played a lot of good teams, and they've had a lot of good results against good teams. Now, they lost to the Bears, and they lost to the Jets. Guess what? The Bills lost to the Jaguars. I mean, we could do this all day.
Going, yeah, everybody has a bad team.
Because they've had bad games. They lost to Chicago and New York, teams that they should not have lost to. But they had all the talent in the world on offense. Joey Burrow's a good quarterback. He's not quite elite yet, but he's good.
He's right there, though. He's on the line.
He's close. Joe Mixon is one of the best running backs in the NFL. Chase is probably the best rookie receiver in the NFL. He's one of the best receivers right now in the NFL.
Right.
T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, that tight end, Azuma. They got good weapons. The offensive line's been good enough. And the defense isn't. Trey Hendrickson's got 10 sacks this year. You know, I thought last year with the Saints, I was like, this guy's going to get so much money and not play well. Goes to the Bengals. They throw money at him. 10 sacks, dude. He's living up to his money right now. Sam Hubbard, dude, I barely even heard of, has got 7 sacks. BJ Hill's been a good defensive tackle. I mean, the secondary's kind of whack. That's probably the weakness of their team. Now, they played the Ravens at home the day after Christmas. They already beat them in Baltimore. They're only one game back. They beat Baltimore at home. They might win that division. They might end up, shit, man, they might end up the 1 or 2 seed. I don't think anyone's even talking about the Bengals. I think they're a very dangerous team. Now, maybe because they have no track record, no history of winning when it matters. Maybe that's why people are sleeping on them, and that's understandable. But they're a dangerous football team, man.
I think what happened too was they started out hot and were the 1 seed for a minute, weren't they? Were they were like 1 or 2 seed for a minute, and then had a couple weeks where they dropped down, and then they went down to like the 7th seed. And so I think people just forgot about them. that AFC North is just beating up on each other too. Yeah. And that's part of the problem. They're jockeying for position over there in the North. But yeah, no, I can see that being a out of nowhere sleeper. The problem is, come playoff time, they have no playoff experience. Mm-hmm. So that's going to hinder them, where some of these other teams we're talking about have been there and have some playoff experience. So that it might not be their year this year, but I would put them right there with the Chargers. I think that if they get hot and stay hot at the right time, that I don't want to face an offense like that.
Yeah, you kind of feel like maybe they could be like the 2019 Bills, where
sure,
they have a good year, they make the playoffs, the lack of experience, and they play well for a half in Houston. I'm talking about the Bills, of course, right, 2019. Yeah. And then things kind of, you know, fall apart at the end. Anyway, all right, this was fun, man. This was fun. I got a lot of work to do with Christmas movies, and I'm dead serious, by the way. I'm going to get you on again before Christmas.
Let's do it.
And I want to spend most of the time, if not all the time, talking Christmas movies. I'll let people know ahead of time. That'll be fun, man.
Also, we're also getting ready to talk some Bills playoff football, and the season hasn't totally derailed.
Yeah, well, there's a big, you know what's funny, dude? We're getting out of here now. What a big game this is on Monday.
Big game.
What a big football game in December. Bills New England Monday night.
Biggest NFL game of the year so far?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah, I think so. It's certainly the game of the week, and the wait for Monday night, which is, by the way, the way it should be. I think the best game of the week, either Sunday night or Monday night, that's always good, then. Always good. I don't like primetime games. I've made that very well known, but this one I'm excited about.
Yeah. Me too, man.
All right, everyone. Give Aaron a follow on Twitter at AaronQuinn716. Of course, check out his podcast, him, Greg Thompson, my guys, man. They do such amazing work, man. Thanks as always, brother. Talk soon.
Thank you, man.